The daf for today, I believe, is daf tes. I want to go back to daf ches and then skip ahead to daf yud, depending upon how much time we have. So first, I want to discuss with you the question of the Gemara about whether you're allowed to leave during Kriyas HaTorah between one verse and another. This was the suffix of Rav Papa on Daf Ches Amid Aleph. We touched on it yesterday, but we did not mention Rabbeinu Yonah. So let's go over the Gemara. The Gemara says on Daf Ches Amid Aleph, Amar Rav Huna Bar Yehuda. Okay, tell me where it is in the Daf. Amar Rav Menachem, Amar Rav Ami. So that when the Sefer Torah is open and the reader is reading from the Sefer Torah, this guy packs his bags, thank you, and he leaves. So that's called Ozvei Hashem. Rabbi Avo Nofik Ben Gavra LeGavra. So Rabbi Ovin would wait until the end of the Aliyah, and until they got a chance to call up the next person for the next Aliyah, he would come back into the shul. So he didn't miss any of the Kriyas HaTorah. But boy, Rav Papa, Rav Papa had a suffix. What's the deal between psuka lipsuka, between one pasuk and the other? And the Gemara leaves that as an unanswered question. Teku, is that correct? Where is it in your Gemara? So on the top of Daf Ches Amud Aleph, or
no, it's on the bottom
of Daf Ches Amud Aleph. Okay, fine. So we said yesterday that Rav Papa was vacillating as to how to understand this Ozvei Hashem, this Iser of leaving the shul during the Kriya. Was it a matter of insulting the Sefer Torah, or was it a matter of insulting the Torah itself, meaning the Torah that's being read, that's being studied? Because Kriyas HaTorah is a public study of the Torah. If it's an issue of insulting the Sefer Torah, at this point, what they did was they would close the Sefer Torah between one pasuk and the other, and then who would now be in charge of translating and interpreting the pasuk? That was called the Metargim, correct? The Metargim. Then you're not insulting the Sefer Torah. But if the problem is that you're insulting the Torah itself, then the Torah itself is not just the written Torah, but it's also the oral Torah. So the Metargim, by translating the Torah into the vernacular, is essentially transmitting the Torah itself. Not Torah Shebichsav, but let's call it Torah Shebal Peh. And Torah Shebal Peh is also a Chefetz Shel Torah. And you could be Mavaza, the Kiddush of Divrei Torah, by standing up and packing out when the Metargim is reading his translation, or he's interpreting it according to the best of his knowledge. And we suggested yesterday that perhaps even during the Haftorah, it would be us to leave the shul while the Haftorah is being read. And the reason for that is because there is he says the following. This was the last thing we did yesterday, which is on the bottom of the right column. He says, "Legabi kedushas cheftas shel Torah, ikar nafkemina ben kedushas sefer Torah ben kedushas neviim uksuvim." He says that if the problem is the sefer Torah itself, we're not talking about a Sefer Torah when we read the Nevi'im. By the way, you know, we're makpid if we can to read from a klaf. But even a klaf of Nevi'im does not, it falls very short of the kedusha of the klaf of a Sefer Torah. So therefore the pasuk Ozvei Hashem would not apply to Nevi'im because there's no Sefer Torah. But if you're talking about bizayon, that by packing out of the shul there's an insult to the Divrei Torah, then the Nevi'im are also Divrei Torah, and therefore you would not be allowed to pack out during the Navi. And it's interesting, I don't know if we got a chance to mention this yesterday, that the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Haim Simon Kuf Mem Vav writes, Osu l'saper k'shamafter korei bin Navi ad sheyashlin kimo b'sefer Torah. It sounds like he's saying you're not allowed to schmooze, and if you're not allowed to schmooze, then certainly you're not allowed to leave the shul, because leaving the shul is even a more public statement of how much you mezalzel in what's being done. And here we're talking about the reading of the Haftorah from the Navi, and yet he still applies these principles of kavod, not to be mevazeh. It means that's a din in the Torah itself. So we got up to yesterday, but we didn't get a chance to study it, is Rabbeinu Yonah. And Rabbeinu Yonah, which is here on the left column of your page, and he's on Daf Dalid in the Rif, he writes that Lotzeis Mutter Ben Gavra LeGavra V'Ledaber B'Beis HaKnesses Osur. He wants to suggest that speech, meaning schmoozing, is even worse than packing out. And he knows this from a Gemara in Sota. The Gemara in Sota says that once they open the Sefer Torah, you're not allowed to speak about anything at all, basically. V'afal pish is sogrim ha-sefer bein tayim, even though they close the sefer, meaning between one aliyah and the next, also, you're not allowed to be misaper. Now, I always say, with regard to this Rabbeinu Yonah, if you're familiar with the principle mutav shiv shogig, you know, it's better that we shouldn't know Rabbeinu Yonah, because who doesn't schmooze between gavra l'gavra? I mean, only the base, the real tzaddikim, you know, the disciples of Rabbeinu Yonah. But otherwise, Rabbeinu Yonah is insisting that afilu hachi osur. So again, you'd be allowed to. So if I saw someone, if Rabbeinu Yonah saw someone who was schmoozing ben gavra l'gavra, he would come over to the person, I'm just guessing, and he would say to him, go out of the shul. If you're schmoozing, talk outside of the shul. Go into the vestibule. You know, don't speak in the sanctuary itself. Why? Because dibur is worse than yitzia min habeis haknesses in this case. So there was a heter in the Gemara that you were allowed to leave the shul from between gavra l'gavra, between one aliyah and the other, and come back for the next aliyah, but there was never a heter to speak. So you know that now they have all these signs that say, you know, you're not allowed to speak in shul and turn off this and so forth and so on. It could all be based on Rabbeinu Yonah, but we see clearly that Rabbeinu Yonah, there's a difference between the Isur L'Saper and the Isur Lotzeis. In other words, even though Ben Gavra L'Gavra, you're allowed to go out of the shul, but nevertheless you're not allowed to be Mesaper, because the Isur Yitzia is a bizayon to the Chefetz of Torah. And right now, the Torah is not being studied, and the Torah itself is rolled up, so Mimanav Shach, there's no insult here. Neither to the Torah that's being studied, because right now Ben Gavra L'Gavra, they're giving Misha Berach, or whatever they're giving, but they're not teaching Torah, they're not reading Torah, and the Sefer Torah itself is rolled up, so there's no insult to the Chefetz of the Sefer Torah. But if you're being Mesaper Ben Gavra L'Gavra, although you're not insulting the Chefetz Shel Torah, no, there's no Divrei Torah being spoken at this moment, but nevertheless there is an insult to the Torah itself. Why is that so? He says that according to Rabbeinu Yonah, Ben Gavra L'Gavra Mitargeminon Kriyas HaTorah. Oh, this is a whole nother take on Rabbeinu Yonah. He's saying that according to Rabbeinu Yonah, in addition to translating the Torah pasuk by pasuk, they would wait until the end of the Aliyah and give a kind of parsha overview. And that was the Mitargem. And he says that would be, if you would be Mesaper, that would be a bizoyon to the Divrei Torah of the Mitargem. I think what he's saying is that Rabbeinu Yonah understood that this whole sugya that we're learning about Yitzia, that you're not allowed to leave the shul while they're reading the Torah, that applies because of the Divrei Torah that are going on. Now, as far as the Heftza of the Sefer, as far as the Sefer Torah itself, Rabbeinu Yonah holds that we're not talking about a bizayon to the Sefer. Again, if it was bizarre to the Sefer, then I don't know if there would be an Issur to be Mesaper Ben Gavra LeGavra, because the Sefer is rolled up. And Kol Shekein, you're allowed to leave the shul. But the reason why also Lesaper is because of the way the Rav is interpreting Rabbeinu Yonah, the Metargim is busy transmitting the Torah Ben Gavra LeGavra. And Sipra Dvarim is a bizayon to the Divrei Torah, which we saw in the case of the Haftorah, that the Shulchan Aruch was machmir, that you shouldn't be schmoozing during the reading of the Haftorah, because that would be an insult to Divrei Torah, even though there's no Heftzah Shal Sefer Torah. And the Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Simon Kuf Mem Vav, Kemen Sheschil Akore Likros B'Sefer Torah, also Lusaper B'Divrei Torah, Afilu ben Gavra leGavra. Wow, he adds another element that goes even beyond the Chumra of Rabbeinu Yonah, and he's saying ben Gavra leGavra, you're not even allowed to speak B'Divrei Torah. In other words, basically, shut your mouth, absolute silence, no speaking whatsoever of any kind from the beginning of the Kriya until the end of the Kriya. And the Vilna Gaon, in his commentary on the Orach Chaim, he says that Rashi and the Rambam are the source for this. The lo dummy lav dafka sheniftach ubepischo, and when it's opened, the kara loshan aschola. He says, at what point does the kriyas haTorah begin? He says, from the point that you open the sefer Torah to read from it. So now, it seems like the Gaon is introducing another element into the equation, and that's the fact that the Sefer Torah is open. But the Gaon says, "May Yerushalmi and Masech the Sofim," that the reason why Poseach is B'psicha Mamish. Okay, I don't know exactly what he wants to get from the Yerushalmi, but it seems from the Gaon that the Issur to be Mesaper and the Issur to leave the Beis HaKnesses during Kriyas HaTorah, these are two different discussions, two different dinim. According to the Yerushalmi, the Issur Sipur begins immediately when he opens the Sefer Torah, and he hasn't even read from the Sefer Torah. However, the Issur Yitziah ain ochal el b'shasha korim me'as Sefer Torah. So as far as Sicho or Dibur is concerned, the Isur Lesaper is basically anchored in the Sefer Torah itself. When the Sefer Torah is open, that's not an appropriate time to be Mesaper. However, the Isur of Yitziyot, not to go out of the Sefer Torah, that's a prohibition because the Torah is being studied and you're insulting the Torah by leaving the synagogue. Okay. Now what I'd like you to do is fast forward to Pei Gimel, which I think we added to the right to the pages. And yesterday we were speaking about a Chacham who forgot his Torah. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. I'll read to you the language of the Shulchan Aruch. I didn't get a chance to research it inside. If you want to bring me a Mishnah Berurah, we can do that. He says, "Kevan shehischil akorei likros b'sefer Torah, also lesaper b'divrei Torah."
That's talking. Yeah. That's, but not necessarily learning.
Well, no, lesaper b'divrei Torah means to learn Torah. To speak and learning, as we say, right? And the reason that's also because now the whole community, as an assembly, is learning a certain Torah. For you to say, well, I don't want to learn that Torah, I want to learn a different Torah. Although, again, Rav Sheshis did that, but that's a different part of the sugya which we didn't get to.
I recall I had seen Rav Moshe Feinstein, he was learning Mishnah between God and God.
Okay, but he wasn't speaking out loud, so maybe it could be that if you're quiet about it, we'll let you get away with it. Again, I didn't research this in Shulchan Aruch. I'm just giving you kind of highlights of the daf, that you should realize that when you learn this daf, and we're talking about not leaving the shul, there may be a whole different set of rules with regard to schmoozing in the shul. And even in situations where you'd be allowed to leave the shul, for example, Ben Gavra LeGavra, but if you stay in the shul, there's an Isur Sipur. And that seems to be fundamentally anchored not in the Sefer Torah per se, because Ben Gavra LeGavra, the Sefer Torah is closed, but because the Tzibur is still involved in learning Torah. And how do they get involved in learning Torah? Because the Metargim is still busy translating, in this case, the entire Aliyah. And for you to speak about even Divrei Torah, perhaps, but certainly Dvarim Betalim, while they're learning Torah, that's an insult to the Divrei Torah. Okay, that's one thing. Now, we spoke about two Kiddushos. You remember that we spoke, but I want to just make sure we have it. Yesterday we spoke about, number one, Kiddushas HaGuf, which means that you take something and you sanctify it in its very essence. You know, every fiber is kadosh. And there's another kedusha. What do you say?
Content as well.
And there's another kedusha, which he identifies as the Torah that you actually know, right? That you're studying Torah. For example, we pointed out that when a person is studying Torah, he's not allowed to enter into a Beis HaMerchatz, correct? Because he's bringing the Torah into a Beis HaMerchatz. So one Kiddusha we call Kiddushas HaGuf, and the other Kiddusha is the Torah itself. When a person studies Torah, he's a walking, living Sefer Torah. In the case of Shivrei Luchos, although Shivrei Luchos don't have the Kiddusha of Torah because you cannot read from the Luchos once they're smashed into pieces, but nevertheless, the Kiddusha of the Guf is still intact. And as far as Kiddusha Guf is concerned, even if you can't use this set of Luchos for the mitzvah that it's designated for because now it's been smashed, it still retains its Kiddusha Guf, similar to the case of Kodshim Shemesu, where even though you can't bring it on the Mizbeach, nevertheless it still has Kiddusha Guf, and you wouldn't be allowed to have Hanor from this. The Nimshal, he says, is the case of a Zoken Sheshochach Talmudo, because he was engendered with two Kiddushos. He's a Sefer Torah in the sense that he's in a collection of Divrei Torah, and he can transmit that Torah. He's a gathering, like a pool of water of Torah. But then at the same time, he has an additional Kiddusha, and that's called Kiddusha Saguf. His physical body is sanctified. And even if he forgets his Torah, but Kiddusha Saguf lo paka bichdi, it doesn't just simply evaporate. Once there's Kiddusha Saguf, it's irreversible, irretractable. Fine. Now we want to enhance this with a study of Avos to Rabbi Nosson, which is codified by the Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah Perek Gimel. Klal Yisrael received three crowns, and the greatest of those three crowns is Keser Torah. The other two crowns are Keser Kuhuna and Keser Malchus.
Four crowns.
What's the fourth? Did I miss the fourth? So there's Keser Torah, Keser Kuhuna, and Keser Malchus. Yeah? So of the three crowns, the Braisa Masechta Avos to Rabbi Nosson says that Keser Torah is the greatest of all three. And although the other two crowns are inherited, this crown of Torah has to be achieved, has to be acquired through Amelus B'Torah. The other two crowns are given exclusively to specific people, but Keser Torah is like democracy. It's called Arotze Litol Yavo V'Yitol. Anyone could have access and grab on to the Keser Torah. It's Munach V'Omed U'Muchan Lakol. Fine. So the Rambam says, Hareu Omer bi Molochim Yimlochu. Lamarita Shekeser Torah Godol Mikeser Kahuna Vekeser Malchus. So if we're going to compare these three Ksarim, then the greatest of the three is Keser Torah. How is Keser Torah greater than Keser Kahuna and Keser Malchus? And he says the following: the legabe Keser Kahuna ve Keser Malchus hamuvan shel Keser hu, the meaning of Keser is the chala chalos kedusha saguf bagavra, that through Kahuna, let's say for example in the case of a Kohen Gadol as Mashiach b'shem and Amishcha, his guf is sanctified with Kiddush Saguf. Melech also needs Mashicha, and therefore his guf is sanctified with the Kiddush of Malchus. Now in the case of Keser Torah, there's no act of Mashicha, and yet Keser Torah is included among the three Ksarim. And if what defines Malchus, Keser Malchus and Keser Kuna, is the change in the Kedushas HaGavra, in the goof itself, then we should apply that to the third, you know, point of this triangle, which is called Keser Torah. And ha'odom ha'lomei Torah miskadesh u'misale. A person who studies Torah is sanctified by the Torah, he's uplifted. Ta'torah mekadeshes es ha'odom. And he bases himself first on a pasuk in Mishlei, that if somebody embraces the Torah, then he will be uplifted by the Torah. That's the Kedushas HaTorah. And the Rambam says that in Perek Aleph of Hilchas Tamei Torah, which he dedicates to the chiyuv, the nature, the scope, and the details of the obligation of the mitzvah of Torah. But when he gets to Perek Gimel, then he speaks about Keser Torah, and that's a chalos kedusha saguf. There's a sanctity in the guf of the lomed as a result of Keser Torah. So Keser Torah represents the kedusha saguf. And the other two Ksarim also represent Kedusha Saguf, the Keser Malchus and Keser Kahuna. The Rambam writes that it's very unique to learn Torah at night. And he says that if someone wants to acquire a Keser Torah, he should be careful with his nights, he shouldn't waste any of them, but rather dedicate them to the study of Torah, V'direi Chochma. Now it's interesting, the Rambam, two prakim earlier, which if in the printed Rambams it means just turn one page backwards, the Rambam says that a person is obligated to study Torah both day and night. And he quotes the pasuk of Yigisa bo yomam v'layla. So why did the Rambam in Perek Gimel, two chapters later, have to emphasize the significance and the uniqueness of studying Torah at night? The Rambam has already told me, I have to study by day and by night. But the answer is, the Rambam is in Perek Gimel, when he emphasizes studying of Torah at night, he's talking about Keser Torah. That's how he introduces Perek Gimel. And within the context of Keser Torah, studying Torah at night has a special, unique role. And the Torah that one studies at night generates a Kedusha, a sanctity to the person, above and beyond learning Torah by day. There's a special, unique school of power in the Torah study at night to generate a Kedusha Sagavra, to sanctify the person. And that's called Keser Torah. Let's get back to the case of a Talmud Chacham who forgot his Talmud. He says that we have to be mechamed him, because even though he's missing the Yediyas HaTorah, he doesn't know the Torah anymore, he's forgotten the Torah because he was ill. But nevertheless, the Kedusha Saguf, as we spoke about before, lo paka, it was not undermined. And that Kedusha Saguf is what the Rambam calls Keser Torah. And the Rambam writes that if you want to be Zocher to Keser Torah, you have to be careful about your nights, not wasting any of them. V'domeh l'shivrei luchos shachal pisha butlem kedusha sefer Torah mikom kedusha zaguf shemen lo v'teilo v'alkein munachim bi'aron u'machayvim bi'kibud. So he says that shivrei luchos don't have kedusha sefer Torah, but they have the kedusha zaguf, and the kedusha zaguf is not nulled and voided by shvira, by breakage. And therefore the Shivrei Luchos have to be placed into the Aron because of the covet that we have to give to the Kedushas HaGuf. And the same thing applies to a Talmud Chacham who forgot his Limud. He has Kedushas HaGuf, and that's not batel even if he forgot his Torah. And because by virtue of his Kedushas HaGuf, we have a Chiv to be Mechabed him, because Kedushas HaGuf lo paka. But now Rav Soloveitchik wants to know, what's the difference between someone who forgets his Torah because of circumstances beyond his control? He got ill, he took illness. As opposed to someone who forgets his Torah because he forgets his Torah. He's not involved in reviewing his Torah, and therefore he doesn't retain his Torah. If the Torah is Mekadesh the Guf, then even if he forgets his Torah later for whatever reason, it could be because of onso, because he's a chola, it could be because of pshia.
That's beyond his control.
But how do you remove the kedushas haguf? You remember the whole thesis of Rav Soloveitchik is built on one fundamental premise, that kedushas haguf, once it's chal, can never be removed. Lopaka bichdi, that's cool. Well, that should apply even to the case of someone who forgets his Torah b'pshia. L'chora. I mean, unless you say that the pshia itself, the fact that he deliberately put himself into a situation where he would forget his Torah, that itself somehow will undermine the kedushas haguf. But we don't know how that's so. How can you undermine the kedushas haguf? So for this, he quotes a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. This is called Bo Pritzin V'Chalaluha. Have you ever heard of this Gemara? The Gemara says that the stones of the Mizbeach, which were defiled by the Yavanim when they went into the Beis HaMikdash, were hidden away. In other words, the Beis Chashmonoi, when they came to the Beis HaMikdash and they saw the stones of the Mizbeach, they tied them up, locked them up, so that no one would have access to them. That's called gniza. So the question, it's obvious. Wait a minute. These were the stones of the Mizbeach. The stones of the Mizbeach were sanctified. And we have a principle with regard to Kedushas HaGuf, that lo paka bichdi, that once you have an object which is engendered with Kedushas HaGuf, that Kedushas HaGuf never terminates. So why would the Beis Chashmonai have to take these stones, Sheshichtu Anche Yavan, and lock them up? So the Baal Amor claims that Avnei Mizbeach did not have Kedushas HaGuf. Their Kedusha, remember we said there were two levels of Kedusha, their Kedusha is identical with that of Kedushas Domim, or Berek HaBayis. Now again, why is it that the Baal Amor holds that the Avnei Mizbeach were only sanctified with the Kedushas Berek HaBayis? Right now I can't answer that question. But that's the Baal Amor's Shita. And the Ramban disagrees. He holds that the Kedusha of Avnei Mizbeach, like any Kli Shareis, is called the Kedushas HaGuf. B'afal Pisha B'chol Dovar She'ein Lo Pidyon Yesh Mol Acher Moel Mikol Makom Yatzu L'chulin Al Yidei Ovdei Kolchov V'migzer Sakosu U'baba Pritzim V'chilalua. So there's a new halacha here that's derived from the pasuk U'ba Pritzim V'chilalua, that Pritzim could be Mechalel the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash, not only the Kedusha of the Avonim, the Avnei Mizbeach, but even the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash itself. Ulefi Zeh, he says at the end of this paragraph in Nira, Yeshlomer the Talmid Chacham says Shachach Talmudo Machmas Pshia Harehu Begeder Ubo Ba Pritzim Mechelalua Upakam Imenu Kedush Saguf Vieno Vien Chayov Mechvod. So he has a precedent here for Hafkas Kedushas Haguf. Okay, let's now put this on the side and talk about Daf Yud. And Belin Eder, if we get a chance, tomorrow I want to talk to you about Daf Tes, but right now we're fast forwarding to Daf Yud. The Gemara Daf Yud, which will be the Daf Yomi, if I'm not mistaken, for tomorrow.
No, today.
Oh, today is Daf Yud. Okay, good. So the Gemara says that you're not allowed to eat before you daven, you're not allowed to drink before you daven. And the Gemara derives it, if you could tell me on Daf Yudam and Beis exactly what line it's on, from the pasuk Lo Sochlu Al Hadam, Lo Sochlu Kodim Shetispalu Al Dimcha. Is it towards the bottom of the Yomim?
Yeah. It's about 12 or 14 lines from the bottom.
So it's the last Gemara on Daf Yud. Okay. Now, what's the deal if a person starts eating before Amud HaShachar, meaning the classic case of Lo Sochlu Al Dam is that he wakes up in the morning, it's time to daven, and he eats, and the Gemara has very harsh words about a person who eats before davening. But what happens if he starts davening before the Shas Tefillah? Because the Chiv Tefillah will only emerge later on, let's say with Amud HaShachar, whatever it is, and he starts eating his meal earlier than that. So we're going to study now the insights of Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says that Kodem Shehigia Zman Tefila Im Hischil, if he started his meal before the Zman Tefila emerges, Eino Posek. He doesn't have to terminate his meal. He's allowed to continue. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, that's only b'mincha. That only applies to tefillas mincha. Aval b'shachris, even if he began his meal before Amud HaShachar, nevertheless, with Amud HaShachar, he has to stop his meal because of the violation of the Isur of Lo Sochlu Al Adam. In other words, this Isur of Lo Sochlu Al Adam applies to tefillas shachris, and apparently it would apply to Tefillas Arvis as well, that we have to figure out. But it does not apply to Tefillas Mincha. Now let me ask you a question, Rabbosai. If you're about to daven Mincha, you're allowed to eat before you daven Mincha?
Yes,
no, you're not allowed to. But, that's a sugya of Psachim and in other places, but if you started your meal before the Shas Mincha, let's say Mincha is at 12:30, and you started your meal at 12, then you're allowed to continue your meal. You don't have to stop your meal. And that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says applies in a unique way to Tefillas Mincha, that once you started before the Shas Chiyuv, you're allowed to continue even after the Shas Chiyuv. However, says Rabbeinu Yonah, although that applies to Tefillas Mincha, it does not apply to Shachris. Again, we have to see about Ma'ariv, but in Shachris is Halach of Lo Sochlu Al Adam, that we derive a lav from the Torah, that you're not allowed to eat before davening. But that lav only applies to Shachris. Therefore, when the Gemara says, I mentioned Psachim, he mentions here Shabbos, Madaf Tesavid Beis, Kevin Shigiyaz Man Tefilas Mincha, once he wants to be Koveh Suda after the Zman Tefilas Mincha, he's not allowed to do so. However, that's not the same as Lo Sochlu Al Adam. Lo Sochlu Al Adam only applies, says Rabbeinu Yonah, to Shachris. And Lo Soch L'Adam tells me that you're not allowed to eat before you daven. I couldn't care less if you started your meal before the Shas Chiyuv. Now it's Alosa, it's Amura Shachar, and you have a Chiyuv to daven. At this point, you're not allowed to eat. That's the nature of the law. The Gemara in Shabbos, which talks about eating before you daven Mincha, it means that once the Shas Chiyuv emerges, you're not allowed to eat. That's not based on Lo Soch L'Adam. That's based on what's called Shema Yimoshech Besuda, that he might get so involved in eating and setting up a banquet that he'll forget about Mincha, and at the end he won't daven Mincha. And that is a more limited Isur, which is only Derabbanan. It's not based on a lav in the Torah. And we have here in Shulchan Aruch Siman Reish Lamed Beis a machlokas between Rabbeinu Saja. I'm sorry, he doesn't tell you who holds what here, but he says Imraksu the Gedol. Like, let's say, for example, he wants to eat a very small meal, and it's time for Mincha. So there are poskim who say that if it's a suda ketana, which again you have to know what a suda ketana is, then it's mutter. Why? Because only in a suda gedola is shema yimashech, meaning he may continue his suda and then he won't get around to davening. But a suda ketana chaplav, where he eats the snack, according to one sheet, that he's allowed to do so and eat the snack even after Shas Mincha has arrived. And basically, everybody agrees that if there's no chashash of Shema Yimoshech, then it's not osur. You're allowed to eat before Mincha, even though now's the time for Mincha, as long as there's no chashash Shema Yimoshech. Would there be a chashash of Shema Yimoshech in the case of a Suda Ketana? That's a machlokas aposkin. But everybody agrees that if you would convince yourself that there's no Shema Yimoshech, then it would be mutter to eat even after Shas Mincha, after Shas Chiyuv. And here you want to turn to the other side of your page. He says, but with regard to Shacharis, if the time for Shacharis came, you're not allowed to eat. He calls it an Iser Mitzad Atzmo, derived from Lo Soch L'Adam. And it doesn't matter, A, whether you eat a small meal or a large meal. It doesn't matter, B, whether you started to eat before the Shas Chiyuv Tefillah or you want to eat during the Shas Tefillah. Even in a case where you started to eat your meal before Shas Chiyuv Tefillah, you would have to terminate when the Shas Chiyuv Tefillah comes around. And why is that? Because it's an Iser Mitzad Atzmo. The Torah prohibits you from eating before you daven. That's in Shacharis. In Mincha, it's not an Iser Mitzad Atzmo. It's only Michasha Shami Moshech Besudo. He'll get so involved that he won't have time. He won't come around to daven Mincha. And the Nafkamina is, number one, what if you eat in a way that there's no Chashash Shema Yimoshech, like a Suda Ketana going to one Mandi Omar? And Nafkamina number two, what happens if you start eating before the Shas Mincha, or Mayruv, let's say? Would you have to terminate your meal for the sake of Davening Mincha when the Chiyuv comes around? And the answer is no. If it would have been an Isur B'fnei Atzmo, then there are no ifs, ands, or buts. There are no restrictions. You're not allowed to eat during the time of Isur. But if we're saying it's not an Isur B'fnei Atzmo, the only problem is that you're too involved in your eating, well, we're going to allow you then to finish up a meal that you started before the Shas Chiyuv, and then you're going to go ahead and daven Mincha. And as we said before, according to some poskim, you'd be allowed even after Shas Mincha to eat a Suda Ketana if there's no Shema Yimoshech. I don't know if you ever had this experience where you came home at night and you wanted to eat a meal, your wife prepared supper for you, and you didn't daven Ma'ariv. So what you could do is, perhaps, again, we'll have to learn the poskim, that you tell somebody to remind you after the meal that you have to daven Ma'ariv. Again, it's a little bit of a flimsy heter, but it might be a heter. Such a thing would not apply in the case of Shacharis. There's an absolute Iser, and it's based on a possible Soch L'Adam to eat before you daven before you daven in the morning.
But you can have tea, or you can have something.
Okay, that's an interesting question about what is exactly achila and what shasiya, and maybe there's certain things that they allowed because you have to focus on your davening. In Lubavitch, for example, they're very makel on this. But right, you know the famous the formulation of Lubavitch. I'd rather eat in order to daven than daven in order to eat. You know, that's what they say in Lubavitch. But the Litvak, they go straight with Shulchan Aruch. They're very makbid. I remember, I don't know if I was there, I heard it over that during the Aguda convention when they had a Shabbos somewhere, I don't remember which hotel, so Rav Moshe Feinstein came down, they had a tea and coffee room for all the guests in the hotel, and Rav Moshe had a coffee and a kichel, whatever they were giving, a piece of cake. So he said to his Heusbach, I want you to announce publicly that I've already davened, that he had davened an earlier minyan. Nobody should be choshish if that I was eating before davening.
Is there a problem for a kohen to
drink before? I think if he drinks wine, there's a problem. I don't know about eating a meal. So again, we have to end now, but I just want to show you the next paragraph here. He quotes the Shulchan Aruch in Kuf Ches about someone who skipped a davening. Now, if you skip a davening and the whole ona passes, then you daven twice. Which one is the tashlumin for the morning one? Anybody know? It's the first or the second? The second one, right? So let's say you're davening mincha twice, and the second tefillah is going to replace shacharis. So there's going to be a whole discussion here about whether he's allowed to eat in that case. Why? Because now he's basically davening shacharis, but it's in the middle of the day. So it is an halacha of lo tispal, lo tochlu, kodesh shel tispal dincham in the morning, or is halacha tefillas shacharis? And in the case of a tashlumin, that second tefillah has the status of a tefillah shacharis. Maybe this should be an Easter of Lo Sochel Al Dimchem, Kodim Sheh Palatim Al Dimchem. Okay, then? So we'll stop here.